Today, we got Andrew Sharp talking Warriors, Clippers, previewing the play-in and looking ahead to the playoffs before we get into some lottery teams and some breaking news. The Suns fired Mike Budenholzer, so we talked about that and what it could mean for the future of Devin Booker. All that's right now. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today on the other line is Andrew Sharp. What's up, Andrew?
It's good to see you, KOC. I feel like we have known each other for many, many years. I don't know whether we've ever done a podcast together, so I'm very excited to be here for the next hour or so, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we've ever done a pod.
We're making history today as the playoffs begin. KOC and I are making history. It's fantastic.
Well, it felt like the playoffs already began on Sunday with that Clippers-Warriors game. An unbelievable finale to the regular season, an overtime game between the Clippers and Warriors. One that both teams kind of had a win, especially the Warriors, to avoid the play-in. They did not. The Clippers won that game in overtime, 124-119. I mean, Andrew, my first thought for the Warriors side of things here is absolute missed opportunity. You end the season 23-8. You still make the play-in, and now you have to fight your way in for an opportunity to face the Rockets, who just had a great win against Golden State a couple weeks ago. Or if you lose the first play-in game, you end up facing OKC, who I think would sweep that series regardless of their first-round opponent. You may disagree there, but for Golden State, man, those first-round series, had they won, would have been a lot more appealing than being in the seventh spot right now. I don't feel good about their chances if I'm a Warriors fan.
Yeah, I mean, we know some Warriors fans, and the Warriors fans were in a pretty dark place in the wake of that overtime loss. I will say, to start with the way you frame that game, watching that game, it's not an original reaction. I mean, a lot of Twitter was basically saying, oh my God, this is the game of the year. But I was just like blown away by how high quality the hoops was throughout the second half. And like the fourth quarter, you had Kawhi going off and then Steph comes back. Steph had been quiet for most of the game, and then he goes off down the stretch. Overtime, we had Harden. I'm not a Harden guy, so it was particularly gut-wrenching to see Harden come in and steal the spotlight and sort of cement that win in overtime. But altogether, it was just like, my God, this is why we do this. This is why the NBA is great. I mean, like, throughout the season, it could be kind of a slog sometimes. But I came away Sunday being like, all right, the playoffs are here. Let's get it going, which was nice. You know, I mean, like, particularly March and April basketball, you really got to love it to be locked in and night out. And guys are sitting, and it just is. It's like, it's tough. But Sunday, that game, both teams were super impressive. And on the Warriors side, I mean, it's hard. I mean, this is why, like, you don't want to basically punt the first two thirds of the season. Not that they intentionally punted it, but they were a mess at the trade deadline. It's why the Jimmy Butler trade made sense. But they just had to be at such a high level so consistently through the final third of the season that they have looked exhausted over the last couple of weeks here. And I think they needed that win, if only to give themselves like a week off to just sort of reset. And they couldn't quite get it. I mean, they were right there, and I did think they played really well. Felt like Kerr was a little bit too aggressive trying to double Kawhi in the fourth quarter, and the Clippers kept getting good looks anytime they would double Kawhi. But all things considered, they did just about everything they could to get that win, and it wasn't quite enough. And I just think it takes a toll when you have to grind as hard as they did down the stretch. And it's one of the reasons betting on them to come out of the West was always a little bit of a long shot. I mean, what do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, look, for Golden State, I don't buy it. I've been saying it since the deadline that let's see them face some high-quality opponents. Like, they've had a very weak schedule, so I think 23-8 for them since the Butler trade is a bit deceiving. They've only had six games against top six teams in the Western Conference. They're 3-3 in those games. They beat the Rockets last game ahead of the deadline. Houston was in the middle of their worst stretch of the season. Five of their 16 games, they only won. Worst stretch for them. They lost to the Nuggets. They beat the Lakers. Pods and Kuminga had huge games. Kuminga, of course, did not play in the season finale against the Clippers for good reasons. He doesn't feel like he fits. Luka went 6-for-17 in that game. They beat the Nuggets, but no Jamal Murray. This was two games before they fired their head coach and their GM. They're lost. They lost to the Rockets. Amen Thompson completely just shutting the water off for Stephen Curry. And then they lost to the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that final loss, you mentioned it, when you were talking about some of their decisions, Steve Kerr blitzing Kawhi Leonard, trying to take the ball out of his hands. One of my key concerns for the Warriors is, if not Steph, who? You have three guys on the floor at times who are afraid to shoot. Jimmy Butler, I know he had a good game overall. He barely scored in the fourth quarter and in overtime, though. He's not going to take threes. He does not take a lot of pull-up jumpers for that matter either. Afraid to shoot. Then you have out there Gary Payton as well. And Draymond Green, who hit a corner three, miraculously.
Draymond's been hitting threes here and there this run. I mean, I trust him more than I did the last couple
and
of years.
And 4 of 6
shooter.
In that game, of course, too. But like, they have a lot of guys who don't want to score. They don't want to shoot. And that's where I look at, they're leaning too much on Stephen Curry. They're asking way too much of him. And I just, look, Butler had a great game, and he's capable of many great games when he's in playoff Jimmy mode. But I think they used the strategy against the Clippers doubling Kawhi. We're going to see that against the Warriors, trying to make everybody else beat you besides Stephen Curry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my prevailing takeaway watching them Sunday against the Clippers was, man, oh man, it's amazing that they got a title in 2022, because they're so reliant on Steph. They've been in this spot for the last 5 or 6 years, and Steph has been able to rise to the occasion and, you know, work through double teams and just be one of the greatest players of all time, even as he gets further and further into his 30s here. And I could buy that formula in part because it's just blind faith in Steph. But you're right. I mean, like, the cracks start to show. They really needed Pods against the Lakers. And like, do I trust Pods to be the guy he was against the Lakers throughout multiple playoff rounds? I'm not sure I do. And Jimmy, I mean, it sounds like you're a bit of a Jimmy skeptic here. Do you want to say it with your chest? Jimmy Butler is overrated. People were overreacting to him landing with the Warriors and potentially raising the ceiling.
Look, he helps, but I do think he's a bit overrated.
Yeah.
He's had some playoff highs, but he's also just had a lot of playoff games. Like, we think about the 23 run. He dominates Boston game one and game two. After that, he was okay the rest of the series. He was okay in the finals. And I think we remember a lot of the highs with Jimmy Butler, of course, him leaning over the scorer's table in the bubble. He's had some amazing moments, and nothing should be taken away from him there. But he's also a hesitant shooter.
Yeah.
And he sometimes fades in and out of games. And like, for all we talk all year about, ooh, the regular season doesn't matter, he's the face of that. He does not take it seriously. And one of the reasons why the Heat were in the play-in every year and the Warriors are in the play-in again is because in some of these games, including that loss against the Rockets, in these games where he needs to feel the moment, he doesn't. And so I don't have a lot of faith in Jimmy Butler despite some of those highs. He's too inconsistent for me.
Should 2023, should that have been a story about Caleb Martin and not Jimmy Butler? I think the thing with Jimmy, shout out to Caleb Martin, man. Yeah, he swung that Celtics series.
Yeah, he kills him.
The thing with Jimmy is his highs are so high that I think he captures people's imagination and it sort of incepts people and they overlook some of the flaws and some of the games where he doesn't show up. Because in addition to 2023, there was also the year where they just were gentlemen swept by the Bucks, and Giannis was guarding Jimmy a little bit and Jimmy just didn't show up in that series. And so I think, big picture, Jimmy Butler's myth aside, the reality of Jimmy Butler today in Golden State is he just, he's like almost a Draymond part two on offense for them. Like he makes smart decisions offensively and he dives to the rim and gets to the line and all of that is very helpful. And I think he's allowed Golden State to slot role players, you know, one or two rungs down on the hierarchy, and they're not asking too much of guys like Moody, guys like Pods, guys like Gary Payton II. But at the end of the day, what Steph actually needs is somebody who can like reliably create offense in fourth quarters and relieve some of the pressure on him. And Jimmy hasn't quite been that guy in Golden State. And maybe he will flip a switch and turn it on. I thought he was flipping a switch and turning it on Sunday. And we saw that during the first half. But he then kind of fell off and flatlined through most of the second half and overtime. And he had his moments even in the second half and overtime. But like he just hasn't really been consistently that number two guy. And I think that is another reason to be pretty skeptical that the Warriors are going to be able to make a run here. I would love it if they could, but there's been sort of a reality check over the last couple of weeks. Like in the wake of the trade, it felt like it was all taking on a life of its own. It was like, holy crap, here we go. And the Spurs loss, for instance, the Rockets loss. It's like, all right, the cracks are beginning to show here, and Steph will have to pull off a miracle for any of this to work.
Definitely. And I think for them, the lack of true size could be an issue as well. Quentin Post, you know,
totally
great late second round pick, 3-point shooting, 7-footer. He's a hit in the late second round, but you know, like you're not going to play him a lot in a postseason series. And you see Zubats dominates that game, 22 points, 17 boards for the Clippers. And the size difference, if it's Houston, if Clippers win their play-in game against Memphis and they face Houston in the first round, Steven Adams and Alperen Şengün, they presented size issues for the Warriors in their recent matchup, especially Şengün overpowering Draymond at times, rebounding over him, and never mind the Amen Thompson factor with the way he can defend Stephen Curry. You don't necessarily need to double Steph when it's Amen Thompson out there, whereas the Clippers are sending two, sometimes three bodies towards Steph. So I think that's a matchup issue. And if they lose versus Memphis, I don't think they're going to beat OKC. I'd pick OKC in 4 or 5. Do you feel you're a little bit more of an OKC skeptic?
I am an OKC skeptic. And I mean, if I wanted to be a real Warriors edgelord here, I would say, look, they need to lose on Tuesday, play the Thunder. You can beat the Thunder. Everyone on the Warriors will go into a Thunder series saying, we can beat this team. We have no fear. And I don't know if I feel that way about the Warriors on the other side of the Rockets. I mean, you mentioned Amen Thompson. Like, that's a great matchup to throw at Steph Curry. Amen Thompson is 100 times better as a Steph foil than Chris Dunn and the Clippers.
And Chris Dunn did a great job.
Exactly. Chris Dunn is great.
He did as good as you can expect to do. No. But then it's like, oh, wait a minute, there's actually somebody better.
Right. And historically, a lot of the guys that have succeeded at giving Steph problems are like big, long, rangy wings, like going back to Tony Allen, but even like Jared Vanderbilt with the Lakers a couple years ago. Amen Thompson is like the apex version of those guys. And that coupled with the size that Houston has and just the waves of athleticism that they can throw at the Lakers or at the Warriors. I don't think that would be an easy series. And I honestly look at OKC, they're a little bit more one dimensional offensively, and I trust the Golden State defense. I would like their chances more in that series, as insane as that sounds to say out loud here. But either way, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. What did you think about the Clippers side on Sunday?
Very optimistic about the Clippers. I'm more optimistic about the Clippers, this Kawhi Leonard-led version, than any other Clippers team in the entire Kawhi era. They have everything. Kawhi looks healthy. He looks like his full self. James Harden is playing even better than he did last season. And I know Harden gets criticized for some of the playoff lows. It's kind of relates to our Jimmy Butler conversation. with some of the highs and the lows. Butler, everybody only cares about the highs.
Yeah.
With Harden, all anybody ever cares about is the lows and some of the choke jobs. But against some elite playoff defenses when in the prime of his career, he was 28, 29, 30 plus points per game consistently, night in, night out. And he's had some highs, including that game against the Warriors, 13 of 23, 39 points in the game, carried them in overtime. He was absolutely sensational. And so they have playmaker next to Kawhi. They have the wing defenders. Chris Dunn was really good in that game, hit his threes as well offensively. Norm Powell did not have a great game, but we know he can fill it up. And then Zubats, one of the most improved players of the entire season.
It's wild with Zubac. Every time I watch them, I'm like, this guy is great. Like, why isn't there more national conversation about Ivica Zubac? And I don't want to get carried away, but like, he's just been so rock solid. Literally every time I've watched the Clippers since October. And I mean, he was great Sunday. It is about Kawhi and Harden as far as like my ability to trust this Clippers team. It, like, can Kawhi stay healthy for multiple playoff rounds? And Harden, his numbers are solid when you look back at his playoff numbers. There have been so many nights in the playoffs with James Harden where I'm just like, where is your head at right now? And what is going on?
But that's where they have Kawhi now, where you don't worry about that as much. Kawhi's head is always there in the postseason. And with Harden, some of his past teammates, you can look back to OKC. Sometimes Harden had those nights you're describing, but his teammates were Russ, who I don't know where his head is at any moment.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, we've seen him obviously win two championships with Golden State, but he's also had a bunch of teams flame out as well because he in part isn't that kind of leader type, the one who's always there. Kawhi is.
Mm-hmm.
And Kawhi looks to be playing at an optimal level right now. It's just, for me with Kawhi, it's, is he going to stay healthy? That's literally my only concern with Kawhi Leonard. But he has the creator next to him in Harden who can help. They kind of compensate for each other's weaknesses. Kawhi creation, well, that's where Harden comes in. And stability for Harden, that's where Kawhi comes in. And then they have enforcer like Zubats who can fill some of the gaps. And they have wing defenders as well. It just feels like a balance to me now. So I care less about some of those concerns you're touching on with Harden. But I understand where you're coming from, though.
Yeah, well, and it is, I mean, with Kawhi playing as well as he did on Sunday and as well as he has been playing for about 6 weeks now, like, it's an amazing wild card to throw into the mix. Because if you guaranteed, you know, 90% health for Kawhi over the next 2 months, nobody's going to stay perfectly healthy through the finals. But, like, if Kawhi's mostly healthy, I mean, this is another heavyweight alongside OKC, Cleveland, and Boston. And I don't know how much I can trust it, but because I've been burned by the Clippers in the past, I've been a Kawhi believer. I worship in the Church of Kawhi, and it's been that way for many years. But for the last several years, the Kawhi believers have been burned pretty badly. Like, remember 2 years ago, he showed up and looked unbelievable in the first two games of that Clippers Sun series and then just fell off the face of the earth. And like, he tweaked something and never played again, or maybe he tore something. I don't know. But that's the cycle with Kawhi. So I'm really wary of trusting anything we saw on Sunday. But what we saw on Sunday was like a really, really high level basketball team. And so I would say all bets are off for the next 2 months as far as what the Clippers can accomplish.
Yes, it is merely to me a question of can Kawhi Leonard stay healthy? And of course, if they do win their first round matchup against the Nuggets, they'd face in all likelihood Oklahoma City in the second round. Would you pick the winner of the Denver Clippers series against OKC, regardless of who wins in the first round?
Not regardless of who wins. If it's Clippers, OKC,
healthy Kawhi,
I think I give the edge to the Clippers in that series. And with OKC, my concern is basically that they don't have enough consistent scoring outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because Jalen Williams is another guy who, in big games thus far, and he's young, so obviously he can change the narrative, but there's a little bit of Harden with Jalen Williams where he'll just show up and kind of flatline in moments where you would expect him to step up. And so if he turns the corner, OKC should be fine. But I don't really trust Jalen Williams, and I don't trust them to get consistent shooting from guys who have shot good percentages during the regular season, but like game on the line, fourth quarter, do they have enough if people take away Shea? Like, you go back to the Mavs series last year, Shea was pretty spectacular, all things considered. Like, I would not ask for much more from a superstar, but like Jalen Williams struggled, Chet Holmgren struggled, and the role players just didn't have enough punch. And so if it's opposite Kawhi Leonard and James Harden and Ivica Zubac, and then some Clipper role players who I trust at least as much as the Thunder supporting cast, I think I have to give the edge to the Clippers in that series. The Nuggets, I don't think they can defend enough to win at a high level in the second round of the playoffs. But perhaps I'll be wrong. I would be delighted to see Jokic make a run to the finals. I just don't see it this year.
Yeah, I don't think Denver's defense is anywhere good enough. They would have to be on some ridiculous offensive run and get some opponent three-point shooting luck in their favor as well. But it's a lot of ifs with Denver this year after firing Malone. And I mean, look, like maybe the energy did shift as Jokic kind of said, they awoke the beast. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think they have the personnel defensively.
That's the thing,
which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it, all year long, their issue was both personnel and energy. Watching the Nuggets, there were a lot of possessions where they would just be standing flat-footed as guys took wide-open threes. And so maybe they clean that up under David Adelman. I mean, it's hard to imagine they just flip a switch and suddenly start trying and it all clicks. But maybe that's what's happening. They woke up the beast. Even so, though, they still just don't have very good personnel defensively. So I'm pretty much out on the Nuggets. Are you an OKC bull in the West? Do you think they're going to be the ones coming to the finals?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Look, I understand the concerns. I wrote about it way back in December about the need for an upgrade over Jalen Williams or him to improve into the guy that you're describing, because the concerns are real. I wrote that after the NBA Cup where Jalen Williams, it was like, oh, wait a minute, in more big games, he's not living up to what he needs to as a second guy behind SGA, just like in the postseason last year, he didn't. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a big believer in their defense.
Yeah,
I believe their defense is truly elite. I think it is, at least this year, you know, in comparison to the other defenses, an all-time defense in comparison to the other teams in the court. And now, is it better than the 04 Pistons? Not necessarily, but this
you know
year,
what?
They
it's
are a historic
that,
defense.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the 04 Pistons, because I was going to ask you, like, historically speaking, when is the last time we've seen a defense on this level? I don't have an answer off the top of my head, but
it might
feel
be
04. Yeah, I feel like they're in, you know, we need to go back decades to talk about a defense that's on this level. And that is the case for OKC. It's like,
and those Pistons did not have the MVP on their team at SGA, a guy who's capable of scoring 40 points any night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or 20 points every night, like he does. He scores 20 every night.
And not only that, Shea pretty reliably gets good looks toward the end of games and is a half court solution that most teams aren't going to have in the playoffs. And so I would feel really good if I was just going to Shea over and over again over the final 5 minutes of a close game. And that might be enough. Having Shea and then a defense that is, you know, about as good as anything we've seen for the last 15 years in the NBA. I mean, it is a powerful formula. I wish they had a little bit more creation if teams just sell out and double Shea. Can you trust Jalen Williams to beat somebody off the dribble and get good looks? I don't know yet. I don't trust him, but yeah, OKC is the boring pick and probably the correct pick at the end of the day. So we'll see. I'm rooting for chaos though in the West.
Yeah, chaos would be fun. And we will get the Lakers and Wolves, a Gobert-Luka rematch from last year when Luka hit an amazing game winner in front of Rudy and screamed at him. We'll get to see that again. Now, if you're a Wolves fan, you're watching the Warriors-Clippers game. If the Warriors win that game, you are the 5 seed and you get to face off against Denver again in the first round. Well, the Warriors lose, Clippers win that. You end up the 6 seed with a first round matchup against the LA Lakers. Are you very angry this morning if you're a Wolves fan, Andrew? Or are you feeling better against the Lakers than you would have against Denver? Because I'd be angry.
Yeah, I mean, I am sort of a Wolves fan. I'm known as a Wizards fan, and I believe we're going to talk about the Wizards later in the podcast here. But I have been on the Wolves bandwagon like pretty hardcore for the last 2 years here. I cannot bear watching the Wizards night in and night out, but I do watch almost every Wolves game. And I actually, in the back of my mind, had a little bit of anxiety about the Nuggets matchup if I'm a Wolves fan, because the Wolves have just like beaten the Nuggets so consistently over the course of this season and really last season too. Like, it was a good matchup. Obviously, they had the playoff series where it was back and forth for 7 games. But I worried that like the matchup looked more one-sided than it actually is. And beating a team, you know, they beat them, I believe, all 4 times this season, and then beating them again in the playoffs was probably going to be more complicated than some people expected. The Lakers, I've been a Lakers hater since the trade deadline. I don't buy it with LeBron and Luka. And I'm psyched. If I'm the Wolves, look, they're headlining opening weekend, Saturday night, 8:30. I can't wait for this opportunity for Anthony Edwards. I know it could go horribly wrong. And against the Lakers, like back on opening night, and then I believe right after the All-Star break, they played again, and Ant was a little hurt and played like crap and then got ejected. So not a great look. But I think that the Wolves have been playing about as well as anybody in basketball for the last 3 months or so. Whereas the Lakers, they're another team that I think you can look at certain nights and they're just like real holes there. I think that they are vulnerable and the Wolves will win this series. Wow. So I'm psyched.
It's going to be interesting from a tactical perspective because obviously the Lakers are undersized at the 5 spot. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be going against Gobert and Julius Randle or Naz Reid, a lot of 2 big lineups. How much of a rebounding advantage will Minnesota have in that game for some second chance opportunities offensively and cleaning up on the defensive boards? But also, it's been, you know, well talked about all year long. Anthony Edwards himself has talked about it, how he gets blitzed over and over. He is the most blitzed player out of pick and rolls of any player in the NBA. Yep. Well, the Lakers defense, they're a switch everything defense, but they are the lowest frequency blitzing defense in the NBA. So that could work to Ant's advantage if the ball is not being taken out of his hands as it has been all season long. So will JJ Redick and the Lakers switch that scheme defensively, or will they stick with what's been, you know, up and down? It's been elite sometimes and then pretty bad other times since AD got injured and then traded back in January and February. So I'm very interested in kind of those two, you know, simple things to look for in this series between the Lakers and Wolves.
So we all know you're not picking the Wolves to beat the Lakers.
I am
in
picking
round
the Lakers.
Yes.
Because nobody in Minnesota can stop Luka last year.
You don't have to apologize.
He averaged 32 last year with not, he didn't have LeBron and Austin Reeves by his side last year, and he still ripped apart Minnesota's defense.
Everyone in the world, KOC, is going to be picking the Lakers. It's me and Anthony Edwards and Dante DiVincenzo against the world for the next 2 weeks, okay? It's fine, but how much respect are you willing to give the Wolves in this series? Obviously, it's early. 20. I don't want to lock you into a pick here, but like, are they going 6? Are they going 7? Or is this going to be sort of a 5-game formality? What do you think?
No, I think it's going to go 6 or 7. I think this is going to be a great series. a really great series. There will be tactical changes that are needed throughout. I do wonder if at some point Redick and the Lakers decide to start blitzing Ant. Because like that's usually the best formula against for beating Minnesota is make somebody else beat you, not Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. People sell out on Ant, and there just aren't that many other great options, at least in the half court for Minnesota. The one thing that I that does concern me on the Wolves side is if you go back to last year's Western Conference Finals, Luka was a pretty vulnerable defender throughout that series. And obviously we saw in the finals, the Celtics just like back cut him to death and targeted him over and over again and eviscerated the Mavs in part because of Luka's defensive shortcomings. The Wolves just weren't very good about exploiting Luka in the Western Conference Finals. And now you've got Austin Reeves and Luka, who they should be targeting over and over again. But I don't know if I trust them to actually do that effectively. And then by the same token, I do trust Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves to just relentlessly target Mike Conley, who has been pretty good over the last couple months and is a big part of why the Wolves suddenly look like one of the best teams in the league. And I don't know if Mike Conley is going to be playable in this Lakers-Wolves series because Luka and LeBron are just so good at exploiting weaknesses out there. So it may be on Nickeil Alexander-Walker's shoulders, Dante DiVincenzo's shoulders. They're going to be in the trenches with B for the next 2.5 weeks, and we're going to shock the world together. But we'll see what happens. I mean, that's the game that I've like circled. I'm so excited about this weekend, but it's all looking pretty great.
All right, let's talk about the Eastern Conference. We're going to do one question for each of the top six teams in these, but I want to start off with the play-in teams. If I told you one of the four play-in teams wins their first-round matchup, who would you predict it would be?
One of the four East play-in teams?
One of the four East play-in teams.
Oh, my God.
Who are the East play-in teams? Let's list them for the listeners and for Andrew Sharp.
Listen, we
will have Magic versus Hawks and Bulls versus Heat.
We got the Bulls. It would have to be, I'm not picking any of these teams over the Celtics. It would have to be like a unbelievable nightmare scenario for the Cavs. Maybe the Bulls get into the eighth spot and shock the world and beat the Cavs. I would give that a 2% chance of actually happening. I can't see any of these other teams actually winning in a first round playoff series. And I wish the play-in didn't exist so I didn't have to think about these teams any more than I already have over the last 6 or 7 months.
So you don't see Miami doing it again.
Oh my God. Miami is such a great example. Like the last 3 months of Miami have been such a grind. Anytime I flip on a Heat game on League Pass, I'm like, man, Bam Adebayo's really fallen off. Man, they're really asking a lot of Tyler Hero. Man, who are some of these guys? Like, are they tanking? Are they just bad? Like, I don't really know what's going on. And I want this team out of my life, man. Don't even put these games on NBA TV. Just you have to subscribe specially to watch these playoff games or put them on Peacock early. I don't want to watch any of these teams.
True or false? The Celtics need Jaylen Brown healthy to make the NBA Finals.
True.
True.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I do. I do think they need him. Cleveland is a legitimate opponent. They are. Cleveland has been a bit more up and down defensively in the second half of the year, but I see no reason to believe that they won't tap back into their peak levels in terms of intensity when they're game planning. Jaylen Brown is that difference maker. He won finals MVP. You got to give him respect. And also, you do need to consider, will Kristaps Porzingis be able to make it through the postseason? He's been awesome this past month, but with his injury history, that is a legitimate question. And Jaylen Brown is the guy who can help cover for those concerns. I don't think you need him in the first round, no. regardless of the opponent. But second round, yeah, who knows? I mean, the Knicks or the Pistons, I don't think the Pistons would beat Boston minus Brown, but the Knicks certainly could. So, yeah, I do think they need a healthy Jaylen Brown to make the finals and definitely to win the finals.
Yeah, I have a healthy fear of the Celtics as we head into things here. I would love it if the Cavs came out of the East, and the Cavs have a formula that's pretty similar to the Celtics a year ago, where they just have a lot of skill all over the floor on offense, and they've got guys who not only shoot good percentages during the regular season, like OKC's role players, but the Cavs role players, I think, are just actually really good shooters and guys that I do trust over the course of a couple playoff rounds. So the Celtics are going to need to have a real A game in order to beat the Cavs. And I think they can do it. But if they don't have Jaylen Brown or they don't have Porzingis, then it gets a lot more interesting. So that's why I say they have to be healthy in order to go do this.
All right, let's talk about those Cavs. Fill in the blank. For the Cavaliers to win the NBA Finals, they need blank.
Oof. They need Donovan Mitchell to be at an MVP caliber level, and I don't trust Donovan Mitchell to actually be at that level for the next 2 months. That's my issue.
What is holding you back from believing in Mitchell at that level?
Watching the last 5 years of his career, probably. like, I think he's been really good. He's been an all-star. I don't think he is he'll have these stretches, and he had one of these stretches to start the year where you're like, well, something clicked. Donovan Mitchell is D-Wade now, and he's D-Wade with a three-point shot. This guy is amazing. And then the percentages will fall off, and it just doesn't quite it doesn't quite last. And so I feel like there are just a lot of peaks and valleys with Donovan Mitchell. And if you go back at it and look at his playoff history, there are peaks and valleys like within playoff series for Donovan Mitchell. And so I need more peaks than valleys, but I'm not sure that we're going to get that on Cleveland's side. What do you think they need?
I think I think Mitchell Garland, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it. The Mitchell Garland small backcourt can't be the weakness that it could be. Teams are gonna try to exploit that. They're gonna try to take those guys into ball screens. They're gonna try to bring them on ball. That's gonna happen every single series.
Yep.
If that's not the concern, if that's not the Achilles heel that it could be for them, then they got a shot to win it all. And that might not have to do with them specifically. It might have to do with how Mobley and Allen are able to be on the back line. It might have to do with how their wing defenders, Hunter and Okoro and Wade and all these guys, are able to be as help defenders, help and recover to shooters on the outside. It might not be anything Garland and Mitchell can do anything about. They're going to try their hardest. Or it might have to do with Garland's. Offensively, he has not been the same since he had his big fall. Can he overcome some of what he might be giving on defense with spectacular offensive play? Because pre-injury, he was awesome. And since then, it's been, he's been okay. He's looked more like he did last year. So there's a lot of things surrounding that Mitchell Garland lack of size in the backcourt that can help overcome it. But to me, that's going to be the key above all else. I'm not worried about the Mobley Allen front court. They're going to play with both those guys. Mobley's offensive development, I'm a believer in. But yeah, it's Garland Mitchell together defensively.
Yeah, and I want to be a believer in Mobley's offensive development and its ability to translate to the playoffs. But that's another one where I need to sort of wait and see. But I like Evan Mobley a lot. I've been high on him since he entered the league a couple years ago, and it's been cool to watch him put it together more this season under Kenny Atkinson. Your point on Garland's offense, I've never really been a Donovan Mitchell guy. Not like a full Donovan Mitchell hater, but he's just never really knocked my socks off, and the aesthetics of his game are not my favorite. I love the aesthetics of Darius Garland's offense, and so I have been in on Garland for years now, but in my heart of hearts, do I trust him to capitalize enough on offense against guys are going to throw, teams are going to throw bigger guys on him and make it really difficult for him offensively? And the thing with Garland is he's a little bit small. And so it's easier to bother him, and he's going to get exploited defensively. My worry with him is he going to be good enough offensively to make that bargain worth it for the Cavs across a 7-game series against the Celtics? And I really don't know. So that's another unknown that is definitely worth highlighting as they head into things here.
All right, we're going to see the Pistons and Knicks face off. A Pistons true or false for you. True or false, Cade Cunningham is the best player in the series.
True. I would say true. What do you think?
No, I'm still taking Brunson.
Oh,
Brunson,
boy.
Best player in Pistons Knicks right now.
Yeah, I like Brunson. And maybe I'm just becoming intoxicated with, like, Cade's next 5 years as opposed to Cade's next 2 weeks here, because I'm very excited about what Cade's future looks like, counting on him to anchor the 2028 version of Team USA, feel like he could potentially be a top 10 guy for the next 5 years, maybe get some MVP love in the years to come. And I mean, when you look back at the way Cade has played against the Knicks this season, like, his excellent numbers are spectacular. And I trust him to be a little bit better defensively than Jalen Brunson can be in any matchup. So I give a slight edge to Cade, but I also have to grant that Jalen Brunson in the playoffs has been really good, and I will probably be really good again for the next 2 weeks here.
You know, I think that's why I favor Brunson. It's just we've seen him do it in the postseason. And yeah, with Cade, we haven't. I mean, the Pistons have not been good. They were a 14-win team last year. They become a 44-win team, one of the biggest jumps year-to-year in NBA history, fifth highest ever. Mm-hmm. And they're the only team that's done it without adding a superstar. Like, the other teams that have done it, it's been teams that, you know, the Spurs drafted Tim Duncan, David Robinson returns from injury. The Celtics get Garnett and Ray Allen. The Suns sign Steve Nash. Like, it's a lot of teams like that that did it historically. And the Pistons, well, I mean, Cade got better. They hired J.D. Bickerstaff.
They signed Malik Beasley.
And
Malik
Tobias
Beasley
Harris.
Has turned the whole franchise around, man. Yeah,
I feel
Tobias
bad for Beasley.
Harris.
He so badly wanted to lead the NBA in three-pointers this year. And then Anthony Edwards plays 40 minutes against the Jazz, and he steals it from him. He took it from him.
It was amazing. First of all, I didn't know that was a stat that guys tracked, because Malik Beasley is like, total three-pointers made, I'm going to win. Anthony Edwards, you need 7 threes. Good luck, my friend. And then Ant comes out and is like, yeah, I was tracking it all game. I was psyched to hit that 7-3. And Jalen Clark was keeping me updated throughout the game. I was like, what the hell is happening here? It's like total points. Like, nobody pays attention to any of this shit. But as far as Malik Beasley, I will say it's been a cool story in Detroit mm-hmm. this year. He's been really good for them, and I sort of expected their season to go off the rails once Jaden Ivey got hurt, but it hasn't yeah. happened that way. They do ask a lot of Malik Beasley, and maybe too much of Malik Beasley for me to actually trust them to pull off the upset against the Knicks, because, like, outside of Cade, there are not that many guys who can score. And so I just don't see it offensively for Detroit, but perhaps I'll be wrong.
Well, I agree with you. And if we are wrong, well, that would mean the Knicks lose in round one. Mm. If the Knicks lose in round one, does Tom Thibodeau get fired this offseason?
I'm going to throw an even hotter take at you. If the Knicks win in round one, Tom Thibodeau should still be fired in New York. I just look at their mix, and I don't. And I said this when they traded for Kat. And look, there are people who could come back at me and say the numbers offensively for the Knicks have been spectacular all season long. So if you're complaining about the offense, you are, I don't know what you're looking at, because look, the numbers are fantastic. That's true. But I also look at their offense and just feel like the sum is less than the, I'm going to absolutely butcher this. They have more tools than are currently being optimized in New York. And I don't like how reliant they are on Jalen Brunson. And I wonder if Kenny Atkinson were coaching the Knicks, would I feel better about their ability to really push either the Cavs or Celtics? Obviously, it looks like they're going to be dealing with the Celtics in the second round. I think I probably would, but right now it's like they get in close games and it's just spamming Brunson possession after possession after possession. And I don't feel like they're utilizing Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby or Cat as much as they could if they were running some more diverse sets offensively. But diverse sets, like, I don't look to Tibbs for offensive creativity.
Yeah, the issue with Tibbs is he just leans too much on what works. That's why he plays his starters so many minutes, because they're the better players. So he just leans on them more. He leans on Brunson because he's the best creator. So he does it over and over. But in order to win at the highest levels in the postseason, like, all of this kind of relates to what we're talking about. You know, you're with OKC, you're wondering who's behind SGA.
Yeah.
Before Boston won it last year, it's like, it's, well, can Tatum and Brown do it? Can they get enough help from Porzingis? Obviously, they didn't need much of KP last year. It's always about sometimes these other guys behind the number one option. And with the Knicks, I think they have the pieces. Bridges, OG Anunoby, the way he performed without Brunson on the floor. Cat, yep, what he can do offensively as a creator as well, not just the pick and pop guy, not just attacking closeouts with an occasional post up. But they have a lot of different guys that they could use in creative ways offensively that they don't. And that's where with Tibbs, I'm like, well, you know, maybe they reach their ceiling with him as their head coach.
Yeah.
So unless you're making, in my opinion, a run to the East Finals, maybe at that point it'd be really hard to move off Tibbs. But if you're Leon Rose and Dolan and that whole Knicks front office decision making crew, they'll have to think about it if the Knicks lose in the first round, definitely. And if they lose to Boston in the second round, I mean, if it's a 5-game series, a 4-game series is what I think it would be. Mm-hmm. They got to reevaluate for sure.
Yeah.
If that what happens.
Yeah. And I think part of it is, you know, the guys they have around Jalen Brunson, they can play this role where they're basically like all glorified versions of PJ Tucker playing alongside James Harden in 2017 and 2018 in Houston. They can do that and be pretty good in that role. And the Knicks can be pretty good in that role. But if you want to get more out of them, they need to touch the ball more. And there's a kinetic energy that emerges when you're actually like moving it all over the place and cutting back and forth. And I just don't see enough of that from the Knicks. And in terms of what they do this summer, it really comes down to like, all right, so what's the goal? Like, how seriously are we trying to actually win a championship with this nucleus? It's an unbelievably expensive team for the next couple of years. So if we're trying to win a title, I think you framed it well. It's not a shot at Tibbs and what he's been in New York the last couple of years, but they may have peaked in terms of what they're going to be able to accomplish with him coaching them. And so for that reason, I would switch it up. Even if you do switch it up and get a better mix on offense, still have pretty serious concerns about what the team's ceiling will be with a defense built around Karl Anthony Towns. But I would like to see what the offense would look like with a little bit of a different approach. So maybe we'll get there. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Yeah. And defensively, I'm sure Knicks fans, all the Knicks fans of my life are like, why have we not seen two bigs all year? Like, let's play two bigs more often. And even with Mitchell Robinson, they haven't done it enough. All right. The other series we got is the Bucks and the Pacers. The Bucks need blank from Damian Lillard to beat the Pacers.
Health and
so they do need him.
Yeah.
Okay, they do need Dame. I agree. I thought you might say they need nothing.
No,
but I agree they need something. The Pacers are damn good, dude.
The Pacers have been really good. And I mean, I don't want to get too excited about the Pacers because I watch the Pacers sometimes and I was like, is this the best bad team I have ever seen? Because they just like, they make smart decisions and play smart offense.
They won 50 games.
I know.
Can you be a bad team and win 50 games?
Listen, the mystery endures. I guess we're going to find out in the first round of the playoffs here. And look, I mean, you go back to last year's run, they're a team that's built well for the playoffs. They've got a lot of versatile guys and, The top of the roster, I don't know how much I trust Pascal Siakam. I don't know how much I trust Tyrese Haliburton particularly. But Haliburton has been really, really solid lately. And Siakam has been also rock solid all year long. So I think the Pacers will win that series pretty easily unless, you know, Dame comes back and is great. Kevin Porter Jr., been a bit of a roller coaster, but he has been like a solid stopgap for Milwaukee. So I don't think it's going to be as easy as one might think if they're down on the Bucks. But I also don't think that the Bucks have enough to actually win the series.
So my next question was true or false, Indiana's chances of making a run are being underrated. I'm assuming you're going to say true there then.
Yes, true. I think Indiana, and define making a run. Like making a run
East
to the
finals. Okay. East finals. So that would mean beating Cleveland in round two.
Yeah. I think they're definitely being underrated. I don't think they would actually beat Cleveland, but I think people will say, oh, well, the Cavs won 64, 65 games. Like they'll take care of Indiana easily in round two. I don't think that series will be easy. I think that could go 6 or 7 games.
All right, you are a Wizards fan, so I want to talk about the lottery a little bit, Harry Andrew. My 5 favorite fits for Cooper Flagg.
Mm.
Number 5, we'll start in reverse order. Number 5 is your Washington Wizards.
Okay.
It's my favorite fits for Cooper Flagg. Bub Carrington hits the game winner on Sunday, hurts the Wizards' lottery odds. They drop from 100% to land a top 5 pick to 80%. Are you angry with Bub on this morning? Are you feeling good karma from winning the game?
I have very complicated feelings about the Wizards generally, and with Bub specifically. I love Bub Carrington. I do continually go back to last year's draft and wonder, was it actually worth it to trade Denny Avdia to draft Bub Carrington? It seemed like the front office was very locked in on Bub and just really wanted him in DC. He's young. He's big. I love his upside. I also really love Denny. And Denny now has looked just awesome for the last 3 months in Portland. So complicated feelings, but watching Bub spread his wings over the final 2 months, including the game winner in game 82. I'm not stressed whatsoever about moving from 100% top 5 odds to 80% top 5 odds. Bring it on. It's all about having good basketball karma as you head into the lottery. And I feel like that game 82 buzzer beater over, again, just an unbelievably bleak Miami Heat team is good karma for the Wizards. So I'll take it.
Well, talking about good karma, the Blazers, they won their last game and they ended up winning 36 games this season. They started Markieff Morris, the Lakers started their opponent, Markieff Morris, Alex Len, Shake Milton, Dalton Connect, and LeBron James Jr. An impossible game for the Lakers to win, an impossible game for the Blazers to purposely lose to assure that they would have the 9th best lottery odds. They end up tying with the Phoenix Suns. They'll send their pick to the Houston Rockets after a coin flip to determine who gets the higher draft lottery odds. It does feel like there's some teams here in the bottom 10, Washington included, Portland, that they weren't entirely trying to lose games here. The Wizards had some wins down the stretch after getting Chris Middleton. Some of these teams weren't full-on tanking, necessarily. I hope the lottery gods reward one of these types of teams. That would be cool if that happens.
So is Portland your number four in the top five?
My number four.
I will just say, if Portland trade, because the one way I've rationalized the Denny Avdia trade in DC was, all right, well, the front office, they recognized that if Denny had remained in DC, the Wizards would win too much this season and cost themselves a shot at a top three pick, number one pick. And really, that's all that matters in terms of, you know, putting together a championship nucleus. If Portland trades for Denny Avdia, has a 36-win sneaky fun season, because the first 6 weeks, very, very bleak. But after that, like, there was something going on in Portland. Chauncey Billups, he signed the contract extension yesterday, deserves it. He did a really good job with this team. If Portland gets the number one pick and gets to have Denny Avdia for the next several years and the Wizards slide to six, I will be tearing my eyeballs out on lottery night. So goodbye, sweet world. I'm out. We'll see. I really hope it doesn't go that direction. But I agree, it would be a fun fit in Portland.
I hope it does not go that direction either. Oh, my God. We need the goat.
And my eyeballs. I need my eyeballs for my kids.
Yes, yes. Number three on my list is the team kind of attached to Portland. It's the Houston Rockets. Mm. I know I'm picking a 50-win team as my number three for favorite Cooper flag fits. I just think it would be, A, cool to see Cooper go to a team that's winning already, and B, it's the most comical possible result. It's just so funny if they get the number one pick with the Suns pick. It would
Poor
be
Phoenix, man.
Hilarious. I know. I feel bad for Phoenix, but it would be funny.
Yeah, literally poor Phoenix, as they are bankrupted by Bradley Beal's salary for the next couple of years. Maybe they stretch it. So I would love that. And one of the things that I think is frustrating about the NBA is, like, we have these superstars come in through the draft and then you just get stuck in these horrendous situations. And I actually think it's bad for the NBA's business to sort of build this way. And so if you could have Cooper Flagg, who I think has a chance to be one of the headline superstars of the next 10 or 15 years, and just throw him on a team that's relevant right away, that would be a fantastic outcome. I would love to send him to Houston. I think there was talk about, you may have raised this, maybe it was my co-host Ben Golliver, Cooper trying to force his way to OKC somehow. I like strenuously object to that scenario, but Cooper on the Rockets, let's do it. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Cooper, the OKC scenario, highly unlikely now at this point, that the Clippers have made the postseason top six, so that pick is not going to be.
That's right. Yes. Okay.
So yes. This is a month or two back when Ben and I were talking about that. But I do think Houston would be more acceptable as that type of franchise for him to force himself to, but I don't think he's going to do that. I'd be a little bit surprised if Cooper and his camp took that route, but, you know, look, if it's New Orleans with the number one pick, all due respect, the basketball fit is not great. Next to Zion, I know Cooper can fit anywhere, but the fit is not great. I could see a world in which he's like, hey, you know, maybe get what you can for the number one pick, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to accept anywhere that he goes.
Yeah.
Number two on my list, the Philadelphia 76ers. It would just be a beautiful reward for Philly after this horrible year. If they end up with Cooper Flagg, I'd be so happy for Sixers fans if they get the number one pick and the Right Sergey Sanchez lottery show on May 12th is this huge celebration and they get Cooper and Bede's healthy next year and they got Maxi and Cooper Flagg and Quentin Grimes.
Oh my God. It's funny you say that, because when you threw out New Orleans as a potential, all right, time to pull an Eli Manning here, let's end up anywhere but here, I almost interjected, but I didn't want to step on it if you had the Sixers as a top two fit. The Sixers might convince me to pull an Eli Manning if I'm
really?
In the flag camp.
The other way?
I mean, I look
it's
at...
It's Philly, though.
So... What do you mean it's Philly selling points? Say, Philly's not bad. Like, I would live in Philly. But
he'd be beloved there. He'd be the savior.
Yeah.
He'd be the guy who put them over the top if they ended up doing it.
So Joel Embiid,
he'd have a statue next to Rocky. That's what would happen.
Look, I just would not want to be a part of whatever the hell the next couple years look like for Joel Embiid. He started the season trying to fight a reporter with a mysterious injury that persisted basically the entire season. And the worst part of his season was the games that he actually played, where people were like, whoa, okay, this doesn't look good. I don't know. He's getting surgery. I don't know if there is a surgery. And I say all this, but it is all pretty tragic that it's gone this way, but it has gone this way. And then, you know, Paul George, do you really want to be dealing with Paul George and his whole deal for the next couple of years? Tyrese Maxey is great. I would love to be part of Tyrese Maxey's next 3 or 4 years. But I just feel like there's so much weirdness with Embiid and Paul George. I would try to sidestep it. Also, in that scenario, Philly has one of the craziest fan bases in the entire league. And we get a 10-year-long, like, psychotic feud between Cooper Flagg and the Sixers fans if he forces his way out of Philly, which I think would be a win for basketball fans everywhere. Everyone wins except Sixers fans. And even Sixers fans are secretly happier when they're miserable at this point. They're addicted to the misery. So I would even count them as winners in this scenario.
Number one on my list is the San Antonio Spurs.
Oh, yeah.
Pair him with Victor. Win right away. De'Aaron Fox, Victor Wembanyama, Cooper Flagg, Jeremy Sochan. Big four.
Big four. I mean, it's funny because earlier when I mentioned the Thunder scenario, what I was actually thinking of is force his way to the Spurs to play with Webby for the next decade and how much that annoyed me because I podcast with Ben Golliver on Greatest of All Talk twice a week, and he is the most shameless Victor Wembanyama shill on the planet. I have to hear about Wemby and the Spurs and the decade-long reign that's coming. It's been like this for years. I really don't want him to end up on the Spurs because Golliver's also like all the way in on Cooper Flagg. I'm all the way in on Cooper Flagg also. I'm sort of Wemby agnostic at this point, but it would bring Ben so much satisfaction if Cooper Flagg ends up in San Antonio that I can't possibly allow that to happen. I will throw my body in front of the flag to the Spurs bus and try to prevent it any way I can.
We had some breaking news during our podcast recording, Andrew. Have you seen this yet?
I have not.
Okay, all right, all right.
I'm just staring at Tankathon here, hoping for the best for the Wizards.
Two pieces of breaking news. I'll give you the less interesting one first. The Pelicans have relieved David Griffin from his duties as GM of the team.
Okay. Feel like it's time.
Yep. And number two, the Suns have fired Mike Budenholzer.
So this is three coaches in 3 years for the Phoenix Suns. I don't know, man. That was another one where, like, if you watch Suns games, it's hard to argue with firing Budenholzer because they just, like, the Suns-Lakers game, like, 3 weeks ago, the effort was so egregiously bad that I guess you have to fire the coach. You can't fire all the players. That's the problem for the Suns. And they've run into this problem 3 years now. So I guess you have to try it with a new coach. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they had no choice. Bud did not have that locker room at all. You know, not just KD and Beal, these guys who won't be there forever, but Booker, who they hope will be there forever. I don't think he had the trust of Booker either. So you had to let Bud go. Tactically, I don't think he brought what they hoped he would bring. He did not feel like an upgrade over Vogel. If anything, Vogel, from an X's and O's perspective, seemed like the superior head coach to Budenholzer. And maybe that's in part the fault of the players rather than the coach. So, but as you said, you can't fire all of the players. They're going to trade some of the players. They might stretch one of them, Bradley Beal. I would imagine they're going to try to trade Kevin Durant for the highest offer possible. And with Booker, I'd assume they'd prefer to keep him. And he says he'd like to be with the Suns forever. I'm not totally certain that Phoenix would say no to every offer. If somebody makes a ridiculous offer of 5 first round draft picks and, you know, some young guys or whatever it might be, I'm not totally 100% certain Phoenix is going to say no to that.
Interesting.
So I think that's something just to keep in mind for Phoenix there. Because if you're Houston, everybody talks about Houston going after Kevin Durant. What if Houston offered a ton of picks for Devin Booker? So that's just a thought in my mind. I think they had to fire Bud because that's number one. He wanted to be there to win. They're not winning. And B, the players did not like him. So regardless of what you do this summer, you had to hire a new head coach. That was a clear, easy decision in my book. But the tough stuff is still coming.
What the hell is wrong with the players? Is it part of my issue here? Like, they did sort of the mean girls too cool for school routine with Vogel. And they did it again with Bud. So, like, you can't just keep being like, well, no, this guy's the wrong voice for the locker room. The problem is the locker room. I feel like all of this reflects pretty poorly on KD and Booker as leaders. And Booker, before KD got there, was someone who I felt really good about as far as his intangibles are concerned. And it's all just kind of gone sideways the last couple of years. I don't want to pin it all on Kevin Durant, but like whatever that dynamic is pretty corrosive. I'll be curious to see what kind of market they can gin up for Kevin Durant. And just like, I think the logistics of making a Kevin Durant deal and executing a trade, given their cap situation, are pretty complicated in their own right. And Booker, he's making a lot of money and enough money so that if I were the Rockets, I probably would not go that direction because that will force really difficult choices elsewhere on the roster. The landing spot that I've seen that does make sense would be Booker to Detroit to pair him with Cade for the next couple of years. And if you're Detroit, like who else are we spending that money on? Probably no one anywhere near Devin Booker's level. So I would, if I were the Pistons, I would put the Godfather offer on the table and roll the dice with Booker and Cade and Ausar Thompson for the next couple of years. Hopefully they go that direction. I don't know. Ishbia doesn't seem like he wants to rebuild. That's the issue.
No, and Booker's from Michigan as well. So maybe that'd be one team he actually be happy to be traded to. But Ishbia and the Suns, I've reported on this podcast before, they don't want their picks back. They don't care about getting their picks back. I don't think that is an appeal to them. They want to continue trying to win. So if they were to trade KD and if they were to trade Booker and if they were to stretch Beal or somehow trade him, I'd imagine they want to remain competitive.
Yeah.
They want to at least be one of those young and fun teams, maybe like Portland was this year, where it's like, you know, you win 36, 40 games, 45 games, and you're competitive and you feel hope for the future, but you're not bottoming out. They don't want to bottom out. I think they'd be happy with a lot of picks and being competitive and building for the future. But you're not going to trade KD and waive Beal and also potentially trade Booker and remain a championship contender. It's just not going to happen. They're nowhere close. And so firing Bud was the right decision, but all the tough stuff is upcoming. Andrew, this was fun, man. Thanks for coming on.
It's great to see you. We'll have to do it again. And I wish you luck. You know, the next couple months, very busy for all of us in the basketball world. It's going to be a fun ride here.
Going to be awesome. Hope the playoffs are as amazing as that regular season finale was. Thanks, Andrew, for joining me.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Big thank you to Andrew Sharp for joining me on today's episode. We'll be back again on Wednesday talking about Tuesday night's play-in games, reacting to those, setting up some of the remaining games in the play-in, and talking about some playoff series as well. And then we'll have another show on Friday as well, talking about everything that happened throughout the week and talking about some of the remaining playoff series. Thank you to Emmy and Mike for producing today's episode, and thanks to you for giving us a listen. Hope you enjoy your week and all the great basketball we get coming.